Time for Mac Break Weekly. Alex Lindsay and Renee Richie are here. Andy's got the week off. We're going to talk about all the new iWatch rumors, or I'm sorry, the Apple Watch rumors, what's changing at the Apple Store to accommodate the new watch, and a whole lot more. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 427, recorded November 4th, 2014. Beats on a plane. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. Now, introducing Squarespace 7 with even better site management tools and other improvements. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK. And by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is an easy and affordable way to help you learn. Instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphic design, and more. For a free trial, visit lynda.com/MacBreak. That's lynda.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about Macs and stuff. Andy Iannacco has the day off. Wow, he hasn't not been here in ages, but fortunately, Alex Lindsay is here from D.C., the nation's capital.
How's it going?
It's going well. I see you've got the crane up, and you're starting to rebuild the capital.
We're building the new, that's the new office, actually. So we thought it'd be really great if it was right next
right
to the
there.
Capitol.
Great to see you, Alex. And it's fitting because it's an election day in the U.S., so.
I'm feeling very patriotic. I'm here in D.C.
Do you see the networks they're setting up for their coverage tonight and all that?
Yeah, so the office that I'm in is actually Eurovision, which is all the European TV networks are all all right here, like on this floor. So the BBC is up on the fourth floor, I think, or fifth floor, and so it is mass chaos here. This is the one safe room that isn't being used up in the whole building right now.
It's a big day.
Yeah.
Also with us from Montreal, where they are not voting today, but will be voting several times in the next few weeks, Renee Ritchie of iMore.com. Hi, Renee.
Hi, Leo. Alex looks so good, it feels like we're all in his studio.
Yeah. You know, I think Alex is sucking all the bandwidth out of this show.
I think so.
It's all going downhill. Anyway, great to have you, Renee.
Thank you.
We are going to talk about Apple's annual report, which came out just right after our show, unfortunately. Did it or did it not come out right after our show? It came out Tuesday at 3:46 a.m. I guess we talked about it a little bit last week. In fact, we did. So forget it. Nothing to say here. Moving on. Starwood Hotels is going to let you. This is good for you big travelers. And both of you, I know, travel quite a bit.
I can't wait.
You're going to be able to use your iPhone or your Apple Watch, should you get one, to open the door. In fact, you won't even have to go to the front desk.
Oh, that's so awesome. And it will tell you what the room is. You know, I stay in a lot of different rooms. And one of my big challenges is remembering every night which room I'm in. And I used to be really good at it. I used to have like a really good short-term memory where I could remember where that was. And now I get there and I'm like, I think that was last night's room. And this room is something different.
I can only imagine.
And so having it on my iPhone and being able to just say you're in 318 and walk up to the room and click it would be awesome.
They should give you walk-in directions. Turn left at the elevator bank.
Yes. iBeacons.
iBeacons. This way, Alex. Your heavenly bed awaits. So it's not all the Starwood property. Starwood's a lot. I think Sheraton is Starwood. Westin is Starwood. It's going to be at the W, which is a fancy Westin. So fancy, they don't need the Estin. The Element, I don't know what the Element is, and Aloft. Aloft.
Aloft is kind of their hip hotels that are, you know, they're usually they took over something that was not as high end.
And it's like a boutique. Kind of
it's a little bit more boutique, but really driven towards business travelers and so on and so forth. They're cool. There's nothing about them that are really snazzy. Like doesn't feel like big things, but they figured out what all the amenities that most of us want that are traveling all the time, and so it works out well.
And there's one right across from Cupertino, like from one.
And which I'm sure is like $1,000 a month. All the entire South Bay is super expensive, and then the weekend is cheap. If you ever want a vacation, the South Bay, Cupertino, and Mountain View, that's a place to go over the weekend because it's like $10 a night. But then you can get, Motel 8 is like $300 a night during the weekend.
It's like where I used to stay in Toronto, the Drake. Where it was an old flop house. It was on Queen Street. It was at the very end of Queen Street. And it used to be like where bums lived. And then they fixed it up and started charging $1,000 a night.
Exactly.
Do you remember that, Alex? We did a show on the roof there.
It was really swanky. You know, they just made it all look shiny. Is it Joie de Vivre restaurant, I mean, hotels that are all over San Francisco are kind of like that. Not quite as nice as the Drake. The Drake was much nicer. That was a great.
Ian Schrager does these things.
Wasn't it?
I can't remember what we did. We were on the roof. We did one show. Might have been this show. I can't remember, but we were up on the roof.
I think it was Twit on the roof. It was like, you know.
I also remember that hotel for its restaurant where they showed in a loop old Computer Chronicles episodes.
Right.
And I remember sitting there with Amber saying, someday we'll be on that wall.
You probably were for a decade.
I think we are. There's the old Call for Help episodes. Anyway, I'm sorry. I got distracted. So. Here's how this will work, and it's going to be soon. After booking a reservation at a keyless hotel, you have to be an SPG member, Starwood Preferred member. You'll be invited to opt in to keyless, and then you'll register your phone. You'll have to have the Starwood app on there. Approximately 24 hours before arrival, Alex will receive his or her room number, giving him time to memorize it, and a Bluetooth key via the app. I guess that'll just be, I don't know what. A Bluetooth.
Probably some sort of sync token that lasts for as long as your reservation lasts.
It's clever. Upon arrival at the hotel, you can completely bypass the front desk where available.
Just walk to your room.
Where there's no front desk available, you still have to bypass it. And go directly to your room. Then, after ensuring your Bluetooth is enabled, the guest simply opens, this sounds as bad as currency, opens the SPG app, taps the smartphone on the door lock, waits for the green light.
Yeah, it just depends on how quickly that order is required. You know, that,
right.
You know, it won't be a big deal unless you're sitting there waiting. I mean, because I think it probably has a better chance than some of the keys that we use now. I mean, you get these keys, you have to do it like six times to try to.
It'd be so cool if you could use Touch ID.
Yeah, just tap it.
Then no one could get in your room.
And they have
you.
NFC. I mean, here in D.C., they have NFC hotels, the Meridian and a couple other ones where you take your card and you don't slide it anywhere.
I prefer that. Yeah, in London, when we stayed in London, they had that. I prefer that because the mag strips get demagnetized right away.
Yes.
Aloft is in Harlem, Cupertino, Beijing, Cancun, downtown New York. It's probably, you know, that's south of house.
The usual haunts, Leo.
Hollywood. Oh, the W Hollywood. I've stayed there. That's actually good. That's a fun hotel. Looks like the place they make porn movies. W Singapore, W Hong Kong, W Doha, and Element Times Square. Sounds nice.
There are some people who are worried about security for this kind of stuff, but it doesn't seem any less secure than just trying to carry around a card with you. And if you go in and lock the door and put the bolt on the door, you'll be as safe as anything.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of, when you hear this kind of thing, you say, well, I wonder how long that's before that's hacked.
But they all get hacked.
Yeah.
And you know, and yes. there's
card
there's,
keys are hacked.
And the security guys all have your it's going to all get into your car. I mean, the guys that work maintenance and the people who are cleaning your room. I mean, you know, hotels are not the most secure locations in the world. You always have to kind of keep that in the back of your head.
So you do tap the smartphone on the door lock, but I guess because it's Bluetooth, or is it using NFC? Because doesn't Apple lock down NFC to pay? Apple
yeah, the NFC is currently only available to Apple
so
Pay.
So it can't use NFC.
It's probably using BTLE.
BTLE, yeah, it says. Based on if I just read the rest of the article. Based on Bluetooth LE, not NFC, it'll work with all iPhones from the 4S onward. That's the good news. Because if we're NFC, it would only work with a 6. And, of course, you'll have the option of a physical key in case your iPhone battery doesn't. Oh, that's a good point. I can't get in my room. My iPhone battery's dead.
I actually would have that problem often.
By the time you check in,
although here, a lot less with the new one.
This makes
than
it
I, than I had.
This before, makes it but. Look fun. Here's the ad from SPG. Is this it? Even a dog can get into your room.
No, well, not that takes. Feel better.
And if you're, oh, this happens to me all the time. My arms are full with shopping bags, but now I can just wave my phone. Who's this? Oh, this is from The Shining. That's the kid going down the long. Oh my God, it's The Shining. Watch out! Don't open that door. That's kind of cool that they had that little. I like this. They're playing to the hip crowd, right?
Sorry, but I left my phone in my room and I can't get in.
Yeah. You got it?
No. I got it.
Yeah. He's the cool guy.
They're the band. Yeah, that's the manager, the road manager, obviously. And then who's this? Oh, Miley Cyrus is there. Wow, this is a very hip ad. Open up and cross check. Oh, this is funny. Yeah, that's what businessmen do.
What I'm really amazed at is the how.
Whoa! We've got children present. We're going to close that.
Well, what I'm amazed at is just being able to open your door has opened up all these other possibilities of fun at a hotel that just didn't exist before.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's quite amazing.
I have never had that much fun in my life. Wow, that is awesome.
And just wait till the watch, Leo. You won't even need to reach your phone anymore.
All right, so that's cool. They say it'll be in 150 hotels by the end of next year. It's just rolling out in these few at first. If I have an Android phone, are they discriminating against me?
You have Bluetooth on the Android phone. They just need to make an app.
I bet they're not pushing this. By the way, a loft in Silicon Valley, Jeff is reminding us, is the one with the robot that brings you stuff. They haven't mentioned that much lately.
No idea. I had no idea there was a hotel with a robot that brings you stuff.
A Loft Cupertino.
Man.
So you say, I need a toothbrush. I forgot mine. They take a $50,000 robot. They put a toothbrush on its head. And then
I have to admit, I would feel I wouldn't feel as bad about asking for a toothbrush if a robot brought it. I always feel bad when some dude comes up and brings me a toothbrush.
You know, I don't mind bothering a robot.
No, I don't mind bothering a robot at all. In fact,
I've
might even complain about it being late.
Disney. Now, Bonnie World is absolutely right in the chat room. She's pointing out that Disney World has those magic bands with RFID, and you don't have to open an app. You just go. It would be, you know, I think a key with RFID is actually a little bit easier. But this has a cool factor, right? We do not think that the Apple Watch is going to be out before Chinese New Year. That was the thinking. Ben Thompson of Stratechery on Twit last week said, I think, you know, he's in Taiwan, so he's very tuned into this. Given the size and port of the Chinese market, that Apple will announce the iWatch right before the February 19th Chinese New Year, because that would be a very popular gift in China. Remember that the Apple Watch showed up in China Vogue. Its first appearance. But Apple's retail senior vice president, Angela Arendts, has apparently sent a video to the crew saying it's going to be a busy, busy time. No, this we're in a sprint. We are sprinting a marathon going into the holidays. We'll go into Chinese New Year. And then we've got a new watch launch coming in the spring. It's a pep talk she was giving, but that is a little bit of a leak. I know you've got your finger on the pulse of the Apple rumor mill. Mark Gurman had this. What do you think, Renee Ritchie? When are we?
Yeah, I thought it was always going to be spring. I didn't know that was really up for debate. Apple has fairly set schedules. Even when they've announced things in January, they've shipped in March or April, and this always appeared like a spring launch. A Chinese New Year is more important in terms of manufacturing because they get holidays and then the factories shut down, or at least I believe they do. So they probably wouldn't try to do anything over that period, which means there's usually a healthy distance between Chinese New Year and when products are released. But it's also unsure whether this will be an international launch. For the iPad, you know, for the iPhone, those both debuted in America first. It took a couple of months for them to go international after that. And there's no indication that the Apple Watch will be any different. I mean, I believe on the US website, it says coming early 2015, and everywhere else just says coming 2015. So
what does early mean to you, though? What is
spring.
Early? First quarter.
Yeah.
January, February, March, April, May?
No. First or second quarter, March or April. I mean, again, that's when the iPad launched and it's when the Apple TV launched. It's just the more recent version of the Apple TV.
Yeah.
That's just Apple tends to do things according to, they're not predictable, but they do follow patterns.
So
plus it's time. I mean, why put it out in January if no one's going to expect it? Everyone's just spent their money for the holidays. Take the time, you know, use as much time as you can to get it as good as you can.
The analysts say, look, you already missed the Christmas season, so it doesn't really, after that, it doesn't matter. But wouldn't you like, normally the first 3 months of the year are the slowest time for Apple. Wouldn't you love to have a product in January, February, or March, even if it's just the last few weeks of March, so you could kind of boost up revenues for that quarter?
Yeah, the last few weeks of March makes a lot of sense. Again, that's when the iPad debuted. But also, we don't know how many they're going to be able to make it first. And if you put that it out during a high-volume quarter like Christmas or Chinese New Year, if you're going to launch in China, you have to be able to supply all of those. And Apple's been constrained before with Retina, and we don't know what the constraints will be with the watch, if any. But the iPhone 6 was constrained. iPhone 6 Plus, very constrained. So I think the spring is when they launch these new things for a reason. I think it lets them get enough space after the holidays, but they don't have to meet crazy amounts of demand, and it's a good quarter to launch things in.
And there were rumors, I don't know how credible, that there are supplies, minor, I think they said, supply issues. I don't know what parts there.
All the time, the Apple announces a product, and then they're constrained, they're not going to make the deadline, and then they launch anyway, and then...
I know, it's just kind of boilerplate, right? You just...
And one of the reasons that they have so much trouble with supply issues, a lot of people will say, like, why doesn't Apple just sort this out? You know, they should just be able to make, they're the biggest, you know, one of the biggest companies out there. But the thing to understand is that the way they make everything is the hardest way possible. Not because, you know, they
what?
Do a lot
How?
Of things.
What,
not
what
because,
makes it so hard? What's what do
so,
they do?
So, I mean, they make decisions about, you know, for instance, when they first came out, I think I mentioned this in another show, but when they first came out with the trackpad for the Macs, they decided that they really wanted it to be a certain way and it wouldn't have the buttons and it would have a certain surface to it. And the failure rate on that was, and this is something we don't usually calculate into the cost of the product when we think of margins and everything else, is the failure of the trackpads was 40%. You know, that was the rumor. And so... So 40% of the ones they were making weren't working, you know. And when you look at the fit and finish of a lot of these the products that Apple makes, they do things that are very difficult. Whether it's thinness, the way that the glass bevels, the way everything fits together, and the fact that everything fits perfectly together, and the QA is really high, also means that you know a lot don't come out the other end. I mean, they literally may get a lot made. And then, you know, some certain percentage, especially at the beginning, you know, while they're still sorting out mass production, because you really can't know what the problems are going to be met with mass production until you're doing it. I mean, I'm sure that they've sorted out most of those issues, but I think that makes it very difficult. And the watch is packing a lot into a very small piece. So I imagine there's going to be a lot of issues when they get started on it.
Of course, when you have a new category, you don't know how well it's going to sell. And I don't think you can assume the Apple Watch is going to sell at the same clip as the iPhone. Or even an iPad.
Well, nothing's going to sell the same clip as the iPhone. That's that classic thing, right? The iPhone is the most valuable consumer electronics business ever. Right. The iPad doesn't sell as well as that. Nothing else does. So the question is really, is it going to sell probably better than an Apple TV? Maybe not as well as an iPad. And where does it fall in those range between the two? Is it more like a hobby or is it more like a tertiary device?
What is it? That's actually a greater question, more interesting, frankly, than the rumor question, because who cares? All these rumors. And as somebody in the chat room pointed out, even the idea that would ship by Valentine's Day or by Chinese New Year is merely something analysts made up. Mm-hmm. He said, I like the quote. Let me give him credit. Analysts are the only people who can be 100% wrong 100% of the time and still have a job.
Analysts and weathermen.
And weathermen. But here's the larger issue, and maybe a more interesting issue, is how Apple sees this watch. Is it seen as a... Do they wait, for instance, to say the Apple TV is a hobby and wait and see how it sells? Or do they kind of say, you know, we know this isn't a frontline product for us, but it's something we'd like to... We're a category we're interested in. What do you think?
I think they're going to go full bore on it. I think that they've spent a lot of money on design. I think they've spent a lot of money on PR. I think they've waited and probably put this announcement off quite a few times. I think they definitely see this as a large category. A lot of people see it as a large category. I think that watches and wearables are probably one of the biggest things we see at CES in January. So I think that, you know, figuring out ways to have us be able to do a lot of those things. And I think that it completes a lot of things that the iPhone starts, you know, when it comes to making payments, when it comes to going into your hotel room, using it for getting through security on your door, you know, in an office. All of those things are great with a phone and much better with a watch.
I have to say I'm a little more convinced of the category having worn the Moto 360 now for about 6 weeks. I do use it, and I would miss it if it weren't on my wrist. You agree, Jason? You wear one too, right? You agree? You feel this? Jason Howell is
our producer,
but also the host of All About Android.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. There have been a couple of days where I've accidentally not charged it, and I authentically miss it the next day, which is kind of weird because, right, like, what are we using it for? Every once in a while, I look at it for the time. But I think what it is siphoning off the important notifications that wake you up. You know what I mean? Otherwise, it's just this phone that's in your pocket, and you almost, like, continue to ignore it because it goes off, or you're just so used to it being there and going off and, you know, just ignoring it. If it's on your wrist and you've set it up properly, and I'm sure the Apple Watch is going to do the same thing, then those notifications actually become very useful.
Actually, that's actually a big point, which is that it takes you a while to kind of configure it to make it useful.
Mm-hmm.
So out of the box, it may not be that useful. For instance, I think out of the box, all notifications come through, and who cares about half of them. But if you configure it so that the important stuff is you're notified about, I think it actually could be very useful. And it does the steps and the heart rate. It says get up and get off your butt and stuff like that. I think that's good.
Yeah, it'll wake you. I mean, it's interesting because the Apple TV was cast as a hobby because of an entrenched media television sort of network that Apple was going to have a very hard time moving anywhere.
Yeah.
So they always wanted to set expectations like we're feeling this area out. But because of cable companies, we're only going to be able to go so far. With the iPhone, almost everyone was moving to mobile phones. They just had to convert people from mobile phones to iPhones. And that's different than, you know, not everybody wears a watch. Not everybody wants a smartwatch. A lot of people wear watches as jewelry or wear, you know, Rolexes or Panerais or Omegas. But so there's not this entrenched base of people who are going to naturally, as part of the replacement cycle, all move over to smartwatches. So it's a little bit different. It's not quite the same as both. It might be more like the iPad, where it's this extra thing that nobody really got right before, and there's a market for it. But it's not like the phone where you have to have it. It's sort of like, do you want this instead of a laptop? And it'll be a little bit more nuanced and a little bit more complicated. I do think notifications are interesting. I think for a lot of people, notifications start off being interesting and quickly become interruptions. So you turn them on, then you realize, oh, this is stopping me from living my life, and you turn them off again. But the sort of passive modes where it is just logging things, where notifications aren't really notifying you, but they're keeping track of things so when you want to go there, you can see them without pulling out your phone. It's sort of like this is a little shuttlecraft and your Starship is your phone. And it's going to be dependent on that to begin with, the same way an iPhone was utterly dependent on a Mac or a PC to begin with. But over time, it'll get more and more independent, and then it'll be able to do all these sort of useful tasks, these passive tasks for us in the background. And it won't bother us, it won't disturb us, it won't take over our lives, but it'll just let us, you know, control our Apple TV or find out who the last person was who called us or see how many miles we walked, all of that when we want it to.
Not a hobby, in other words.
It'll make a lot more money than a hobby.
Yeah. I think it's a big category. I mean, I think a lot of people are trying to figure out what to do with their fitness bands, and the fitness bands are trying to get to being a watch, but I think that's going to be hard because building the platform, it's not going to, like the iPhone and like the iPad. I mean, the iPhone started off as just being ahead because it was a really great interface, but really what made it as popular as it is the platform, you know, and I think that, and of course the iPad was able to build on that, and I think that the platform is going to work. I think that it's going to be, you know, and I think that's going to be the hard part for the Fitbits and the, you know, a variety of other ones that are trying to move into that is, can they build a platform that's as compelling as what Apple's able to do?
You saw the HP Chrono Wing. At least HP did one thing right. They got a designer, Michael Bastien.
I really want the computer.
To make it.
I want the 3D computer. I don't know about the watch.
3D computer? I don't know that one.
But HP has, you know, came out with this computer that's a mixture of 2D and 3D.
Oh, forget it. You really want that?
It looked like a lot of fun. It was fun. I build those from scratch. I build stuff like that. Well, not the 3D, but all the
other
stuff.
It's kind of like the postcard where it's looking at you or whatever. You don't want that. Trust me. So this is
Apple is hiring, apparently.
Go ahead.
I was going to say Apple is apparently hiring a dedicated evangelist for WatchKit, like to just help developers get applications moved over to the watch. Because it's not a one-to-one transport. You have to reevaluate and reimagine your application for the watch. And that'll be a big deal. If, you know, Twitter is a really great experience. If a bunch of the apps that you use every day and love on your phone are a really great experience, and that makes the watch more valuable to you.
That could be a, as much of a holdup as anything else. You want it to launch with some useful stuff. So this is the Chrono Wing smartwatch from HP. This is all LCD, by the way. There's no physical, but it does have a bunch of buttons. No touch screen, no microphone, just a bunch of buttons. And apparently the Yankees beating the Red Sox. I think HP doesn't understand that that is a loaded thing to say. 7-2, ninth inning. So this is a notification watch, not a health watch. I think everybody, you know what everybody's doing? They're getting it all out before Apple does, because they know once Apple does it.
Well, but I think the problem they have, and I think this is like exactly why Apple made the announcement, was Apple, there's just a lot of people. I mean, Samsung talked about how their quarterly earnings were lower because everyone was waiting for an iPhone. And in the same way, Apple really has you know, kind of sandbagged the industry. Everyone's going to put out a whole bunch of ideas. But no one's going to really, there's just anybody who's really serious about this is maybe not going to buy the Apple Watch, but they're not going to buy something else before it comes out. They're going to want to see it.
So you were talking about the HP Sprout?
Yeah.
Okay. It's not exactly a 3D. It's a virtual reality, augmented reality computer.
But it can scan, and then they have 3D printers coming out as well.
Right. You have a...
So there's a lot of...
I would want one of these. This is cool. This is cool. And of course, it'll be available sometime. Oh, it's next week. Yeah. You know what this looks like? You can get something like this for the iPad that's really cool. What is the name of that little hood you put over your iPad camera? And then it has $70. You've seen that. Your kids would love this. What's the name of it, chat room? You know what I'm talking about? iPad hood. Little hood. It uses the camera. Oh, I'm never going to find it that way. We should order one. It was a Kickstarter, I think, and now it's out. And you have little actual real-world blocks. The iPad camera can see them. And then you can do a Tangram, for instance, and it'll show it on the screen, and you try to match it, and then it goes bing when you get it right. So they're already doing this on the iPad. It's kind of the mix of real-world and digital world.
What I think with this PC, I think that will be interesting is this is getting away. Finally, someone's doing something. I don't know if it's going to work or not, but someone's finally doing something that is different than a keyboard and a mouse and everything else. They're going to experiment with it, and it gives them a little R&D at least to work with.
Yeah. Here's the Osmo. This is actually really cool. It's available for $70. You play on the iPad with real people and real objects. They have several games. Let me make this full screen so you can see it. This little thing, all that really is a mirror that goes on your iPad's camera. And now, so she's going to do the Tangram. So it puts a Tangram on the screen. She arranges it. And it kind of knows what she's doing because it's got the camera. And then there's other ones for like, have you seen this, Alex?
I have seen it. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's available now, $70. And they have a variety of little games besides that you can do. There's a... the word game. And this is cute. They show little kids doing it. I want to get past the Tangram, though. There's the words, too.
Yeah, Tangrams, I think the problem for me is that when I was in school, that was kind of detention for me. So,
how about this? This one, you draw a picture, and it's a physics. You actually create a physics game with real markers.
That's cool.
Now, that's awesome, right?
Yes.
I think this is really interesting. So HP's just stealing this. Copy. I'm sorry. Of course, they don't have a 3D print. Oh, look, the dinosaur becomes part of the game. You put a little rubber dinosaur on the piece of paper. See, now I like it. Now how much would you pay? I'm going
to
order
this. Well, and whether it's this or Osmo, what's really interesting is being able to add, you know, using really this interface that can constantly be upgraded, can constantly be improved. So you just have to figure out how do we get it into that computer. And I think that we're going to see a lot of these things where we're trying to figure out how to just get stuff into the computer, because then we're able to constantly improve it rather than constantly building hardware devices and shipping out different kinds of blocks to schools and everything else. A lot of it's going to become more and more virtual.
I'm excited about the iWatch. I'll buy one. I'm also skeptical. I'm excited and skeptical.
Which one, Leo? Stainless steel, aluminum, rose gold?
Oh, rose gold. No, of course not. but I don't want the sport one either. So I think the middle one. The least expensive is already $350. We don't know what the middle one's going to be. What do you think the stainless steel one's going to be?
Closer to $1,000.
Yeah. Jeez. This habit of mine is very expensive. Very expensive habit.
It's for the listeners, Leo.
I'm doing it for you.
Yes.
Just for you. According to other information, it's not a rumor, but they're telling the Apple Store employees will get extra training to sell the watch, and you will be able to try it on. It'll be more like going to a high-end dress store, and you'll get to I don't know. What do you think? Does this watch make me look fat? And try different bands, different accessories, different colors.
That go with my eyes.
Does it go with my eyes? So they're pointing out that normally when you go into the Apple Store, everything's tethered with a cable. But and I don't know if this won't be, but I think it probably won't be if you're going to be able to try it on.
It needs some interesting remodeling.
Yeah, it's a whole new thing, isn't it? They're going to end up looking like Macy's. Yeah. They're going to have glass cases with haughty people standing behind them. The watches in there.
Well, once you start charging that kind of money for a watch, you know, you really are buying your way into that. I mean, that's kind of part of the thing. If someone's going to spend that kind of money, you know, it's not something that's a well-known thing like a tablet or a phone or something like that. Yeah. And so you really have to, you're going to have to be able to put it on and take a look at it. I mean, I ordered everything online, so I don't need that. But I think a lot of people are going to want to.
I remember... Lisa drags me into expensive jewelry stores. I remember going to a jewelry store's... Probably was in London, and she said, well, can I try that ring on? And the woman says, that ring? Yes. She has to get a key, get a manager. We get ushered into a separate room. They practically lock the door behind us for her to try it on. I said, well, just, you know, out of curiosity, how much? $250,000. No wonder. But if you have a $10,000 watch, you're just going to, like, some Joe comes in with, you know, off the street, and I go, well, try it on. See what you think. Go look at it in the sun. You can't do that, right?
A different buying experience.
It's a very different experience. So they're going to have to redo the stores, and it'd be interesting to see what they do. All right, let's take a break. We got a great one. I got lots more to talk about, and we got the best guys here in the business to do it. I miss Andy. We love Andy. Taking the week off. We got Renee Ritchie from iMore.com and the Debug Podcast, which is an awesome podcast, and so much more. It's all at iMore.com. Alex Lindsay, who has nothing to plug because he now works for the federal government in a secret role.
Coming to you from an undisclosed location.
Well, yeah, I can't figure out where the hell is he.
See, and I even have.
Did you zoom in the Capitol building? Yeah, sorry? Do that. Would you do that? Yeah. I think you zoomed in the Capitol building. Are you? Did they move your little cube out farther on the?
Yeah, you know, it's out on the high rise, you know, and there is a
place on that roof there because I've been there. Actually, you're in a different one because that used to be the White House behind you.
Yeah, well, yeah, this is a different picture. So I know.
But see, it's moving. Wait a minute. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, well, there's feeds, you know, in this building, there's feeds from all over the place. So.
Oh, so what else can you put behind you? Can you put the White House? Can you be in the press?
Hold on, I'll see if I can get the.
Okay, I'll do an ad while you figure out where else you could be. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com. Squarespace, the place to make your next website, because Squarespace does it the way you would do it. If you thought about it, how could I do this? Well, I'd want to have the best hosting, right? Never goes down. Perfect stuff. Don't have to worry about security. You know, everything's managed for you. But, you know, if I'm going to do that, I also want to be able to run the best software. I don't want to have to, you know, be a geek and install it and all and kind of... I want it to just be great software, great hosting, kind of married together. Oh, you're talking Squarespace now. Would you perhaps want 24/7 support directly from the Squarespace offices, the developers, the people who do Squarespace? Yes, of course you would. And that's what you get with Squarespace. 24/7 chat or email. You can. There also is a great self-help site, because I know a lot of us can have, I think I can figure it out. Just point me in the right direction. So they've got video workshops, a beautiful help portal, and you can do so much. They're constantly improving their platform. They just released Squarespace 7. Makes it even easier to get your unique website started. It's now more all-inclusive, easier to navigate and operate in a seamless experience. For instance, Squarespace 7 allows you to live edit on one screen. You don't have to go back and forth to see the preview mode. You're actually working on the site directly, dragging and dropping, and that's the site. You can even preview the designs in device mode. The nice thing about all Squarespace sites is that they work great on any size screen. So if you want, you can say, put this in device mode, and you can see what it looks like on a tablet or on a mobile phone. Instant access to professional stock photography from Getty, as little as $10 per image for your site. Instant branded email setup with Google Apps. So you're small. It's great for a small business. And you get that automatically when you sign up for a Squarespace account. And then templates that are designed for specific professions. So if you're a musician, if you're an artist, an architect, a chef, they've got a design category with templates designed for those industry groups. The New Horizon template, for instance, that's laid out for bands. So that it's already got a place for tour dates and a music player on it, so you put your songs up there, a merch store. E-commerce on every template, by the way, and not just e-commerce, the best e-commerce anywhere. That's the Horizon. There it is. So this is for bands. And there's also a developer platform now out of beta. So you can, you don't have to be a CSS or JavaScript or HTML guru, but if you are, you will love it. You'll be using the same platform Squarespace uses internally for its own site. So you have absolutely amazing control. Easy to use, easy to set up. You could try it free for 2 weeks, no credit card needed, and it all starts at just, look at that. $8 a month. You know, a lot of bands say, we want a band site, but who's going to do it? And we don't, and they can go, you can go to these very expensive, the labels have these very expensive solutions. No, go to Squarespace, $8 a month. And when you sign up for a year, that includes your domain name, Squarespace site. Let's say you become the Beatles. Doesn't matter. Bandwidth is free, and they can handle as much bandwidth as you can, as many users as you can throw at it. They've got great apps too, Portfolio, Note, Metric, Blog. By the way, the Note and Blog app's now on Android too, which I am very happy about. Squarespace. To begin using Squarespace 7, existing customers go to the Settings tab and you can activate all those new features. That's nice. Make sure, though, get the two-week trial, no credit card needed, but do use our offer code MacBreak when you sign up, because you will get 10% off. And they will then know that you are supporting MacBreak Weekly. It's the best way you can support our shows is to use that offer code MacBreak at squarespace.com. So, Alex, where else can you be in the Where in the World is Alex Lindsay?
No, everybody's busy. All the switches are busy right now. Because of the elections. Yeah, so
you're stuck in the Capitol.
I'm stuck at the Capitol. It's going to be hard. There's a lot of congestion here in D.C. due to the election.
I just love Alex is like it's like knowing a fantasy video wizard, like just some guy. And it's just always amazing to see what you're doing.
You should wait. You know, I've gotten very, you know, Andy has he really got me thinking about that.
Crane Cam 3000, the future of video podcasting.
I've been working on my own version of that.
Oh, but Andy's not going to be happy.
Well, you know, I'll send Andy one if he likes. I'll send Renee one. You know, right now it's a little bit of hardware.
It's going to be like a jib, and it's going to float, and
yeah, something like that.
Steadicam for a mini cam.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, you have to have gloves and virtual reality. You know, get a Oculus.
I have an Office 365 subscription. I confess, I use because some people need me to use Microsoft Office. And it's cheap. It's like $7 a month. Plus, by the way, you get unlimited now. Unlimited OneDrive storage. Not a terabyte, but unlimited. But I still can't. I should, because I know people want to know. I can't bring myself to download Outlook from the Mac.
It's because you looked at it first.
No, I hate Outlook. I hate it. What do you think?
I have to admit that I'm on the verge of getting rid of all local mail apps. You know, I think that I work on different computers, and one of the biggest things I get concerned about when I think about losing my computer, like if I misplaced it or whatever, is all my email. And so, you know, part of me is just thinking I'd rather just log in and just get it all on the web. Once you get kind of used to that process, I think that it's actually a pretty pretty doable thing. So I haven't decided yet. The only problem I get into is when I'm on a plane, not being able to read my email. But outside of that, you know, now that most of these flights all have Wi-Fi anyway, I've been thinking of just ditching the whole, email client altogether, just to make sure that I can you get it faster. I know if you're on Google Mail, you know that a lot of times the delay between when you get it on the web and when you get it in Apple Mail, for instance, can be minutes, which to me seems like an eternity sometimes. So someone will be on the phone saying, "I just sent it to you," and if I go to the web, I can get it right then. Otherwise, I can kind of wait around until IMAP.
People still need Outlook, though. There's some businesses. Like Premier Radio will send me calendar invites in Outlook, and I say to them, "What do you think? Who uses this? What are you, crazy?"
Enterprise.
But it's Enterprise, exactly. So tell me, Renee, that you installed Outlook on the Mac.
No, I can't do it, Leo. I worked in Enterprise for so long, and it was so painful that once I got out, I just ran and never looked back.
All right. That means I have to download it and install it.
I saw the interface that leaked, and it was just horrible. It was like a button explosion. It was it was not human.
You know what? They say now it looks the same as it does on Windows.
Oh.
That's a selling
point. The inhuman interface.
Yeah. We have a producer with Outlook, and every time she opens it up, I'm like, what is this? What are you doing? I don't understand. This is horrible. This is a horrible life. Yeah.
Well, okay.
They have an inability to say no to features, which is not always the best thing.
But if you're an enterprise, exactly right. And, Ars Technica says the new Outlook for Mac shines, Lee Hutchinson writing. But he does say licensing confusion gets in the way. Outlook for Mac, because they haven't upgraded Outlook Office for the Mac in 4 years. I mean, we really are due for an Office upgrade. That will come later.
Updated iWork.
Right. Apple's not doing it either. Do people not do work anymore? Is that it?
Well, I mean, they just did update iWork. They took it. They
stripped
it over
everything
the
out.
Engine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not an update.
The cross date. It's compatible now, and moving forward, they're going to update it. Yeah. But yeah, it does seem like there's no pressure on productivity.
Yeah. Like nobody really needs it anymore. What the hey? Who needs productivity?
We've got Photoshop. We're fine.
All right. I'm installing. Believe it or not. I'm installing
it. Well, I just find that when we want to be collaborative, we typically are using Google. When we want to go fast and make it look pretty, then we use the Apple products. Right. And the Windows products are kind of this kind of bad middle ground that don't seem to really make any sense if you're an Apple user, unless you have to integrate with Enterprise.
Yeah.
All right.
They're compatible.
So I've run the installer and just silently quit, and that's all. I don't know what I'm now supposed to do. That's it? What do I do? Out. Look. Oh, there we go. I guess it just didn't. No, there. Oh, I see. There. Product deactivated. Thank you. This must be that licensing hell that they're talking about. So, okay. Don't show my screen. I have to sign in now to my Office 365. Anyway. Ars Technica says the issue is it's great, wonderful, love it, and licensing is a nightmare. It can only be used if you have certain, not all, Office 365 subscriptions. If you don't pay for a monthly subscription or you buy a box, they call that the perpetual version, you're going to have to wait until next year to get the new Outlook. Aw. Not all subscriptions are eligible, apparently. So you have to have the right licensing. Let me see if mine is. I'm just curious now.
I had this similar problem with Adobe because I got the Retina iMac and I wanted to put Photoshop on it, but yeah. I already had it on two Macs, and I can't pay them more money to add another license. I have to either create a second account or I have to log off of one machine, go log into another machine, which I never remember to do, and then they get cranky if you do it too often. And
yeah, at least Microsoft with the Office, some of the Office subscriptions, the one I have, lets you install it in five different machines. So that's nice.
Better.
Yeah. That's kind of why I got it. Okay, sign in to activate Office. Sign in failed.
And Renee, so Photoshop gets cranky if you go into too many different computers. I haven't had that happen yet.
How many can you install? I thought it was just for one.
It's two. You can do two. And if you're on a machine that's not licensed, you can tell it to forget all the other licenses, but it doesn't like you to do that more than once every 24 hours.
Right.
But then you can log out of a machine if it's near you and then go log in.
Okay, that's good to know. I thought it was just one. That's good.
Yeah, well, you can get into it. Once you install it, you can have two of them running at any point in time.
Yes.
And I guess I don't do it often enough to run into that problem, but I very frequently am on another computer and I just log in as myself and tell it to forget the other ones, right. And I'll get back to them later.
Yeah.
As long as they have LastPass, because of course I gave it some long hash, and it's the one place that LastPass doesn't work as well, because Adobe's got their crazy cloud weird flash thing that they install.
Yeah, I use one password. It's the same problem. You have to cut and paste like an animal. You can't
you're just like, ugh. Feel like when you're used to LastPass and anything does anything other than the way it was supposed to work, you're just like, oh, what am I doing here? This is stupid. What are these people? They hate
me. We just want to work. Why do we jump to
I know. I just want to be able to click and have it go away. So,
yeah. Oh, I give up. I'll talk about it next week, I guess. I should have. I feel bad. I should have installed it earlier.
Well, this is the thing to talk about, is the fact that it's a pain in the neck.
That Nadal and a group of ninjas are on their way to help you, Leo.
It's because you have to. The licensing means you log into your account, right? Because it's a subscription. And I've had problems with doing this in the past, but that's, you know what, it's me, and this happens to me all the time when I use Microsoft products. I think that my mind doesn't work that way. And other people go, oh, this is obvious. I mean, Lee Hutchison, who wrote this, is the senior reviews editor. He likes it, so it must be good.
Yeah. Yes.
Although, one upshot of Microsoft's confusing licensing, he writes, is borne out at ours. Many of us at ours use Macs with the enterprise version of Office 365, but we found that most of the staff was unable to upgrade.
That's Ars Technica. That's not like the business guy at somewhere or whatever. That is Ars Technica is having trouble upgrading their thing.
Maybe I don't feel so bad. The problem appears to be that while Office 365 consumer accounts have access to the new Outlook, not all tiers of Office 365 commercial accounts do. And even if you have the new Outlook because of a personal consumer subscription, it will not allow you to connect to an Exchange server account that is not licensed at the appropriate Office 365 level.
I've got such a headache now.
Shame on you.
Just imagine someone like waving this big red flag of we might have wanted to not make it hard to actually upgrade.
I give up.
Negative Ghost Rider, the pattern is full.
This is why people use LibreOffice. So Trent Reznor, many people, you know, think of Beats, they think of Dr. Dre. They think of Jimmy Iovine. But they don't think of Trent Reznor, who is the frontman for Nine Inch Nails. He is, in fact, chief creative officer. He declined to have a headphone named after him.
And it would have been a good headphone, the Reznor.
The Reznor.
I'm declining.
He says no. But he is going to do some stuff at Apple. He says that he gave an interview to Billboard saying he is fully in it right now. On an unannounced music project, Reznor's role is described as an evolution of his role at Beats. Quote, it's related to that. Beats was bought by Apple and they expressed direct interest in me designing some products with them. I can't go into the details, but I feel like I'm in a unique position where I could be of benefit to them. That does mean some compromises in terms of how much brain power goes towards music and creating. I think there's one reason that you don't see Dre a lot and Cupertino, because he's still in the studio recording, you know, producing people. But Reznor says it's very creative work. It's not directly making music, but it's around music. I'm fully in it right now. It's challenging. It's unfamiliar. It's kind of everything I asked for. And the bad thing is it's everything I asked for. He says he believes streaming music is the right model for music distribution.
And Nine Inch Nails has been way ahead of this for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so one of the things that they did in the early, you know, I don't know how long ago, 5 or 6 years ago, was they actually put their album up on BitTorrent and let everybody download it. And then they had a CD that went out for $15. But then they did a collector's edition that I think there was 3,000 copies at $250 each. And they signed the album and they signed the CD, and they made an album, and the CD and there was all this extra stuff in it, and they sold out of that in like a week or two.
Didn't they also do GarageBand products so you could remix projects?
He took a whole song. They bounced an entire Pro Tools. So they didn't build it in GarageBand, but they took they took one of their songs and they bounced all the tracks out of Pro Tools and put it all into GarageBand. And it is like a master's course in how to mix.
Isn't it awesome?
You know, like it was both overwhelming and exciting, and you could just sit there and just dig into it for hours of looking at how they, the transitions and how they're setting everything up. So he's definitely, really seen that there's got to be new and interesting ways of engaging listeners. And there is a lot of tiers. You know, I think that one of the things that the music industry thinks of is everybody just buying singles or albums. But what about the higher quality, the 24-bit audio? What about releasing albums that you can remix or pieces that you can remix and charging people a premium? There's a certain group of people that would do that. And I think that those are all things that I think he more than almost anybody out there would be thinking about.
I think it's very interesting. He sounds like he's redesigning the Beats streaming music thing. He says, quote, the right streaming service could solve everybody's problems. And this coming, a day or two before it was announced today, Taylor Swift has pulled all her music off Spotify. Artists don't like streaming because they make so little money on it.
Well, but part of it is that it's a tiny little market right now. So, of course, people aren't making enough money because not everybody's doing it. But once you have, at 17 million or 15 million users, yeah, that's a drop in the bucket. But the artists are getting a percentage of the entire bucket. And so the thing is as you end up and the trajectory is, regardless of what artists want or wish for, 80% of the market is going to be subscription in the next, probably 5 years. And so, but as that happens, the other thing is that you now are going to have a lot of the pot that they're all sharing is going to be a lot bigger. And I think that is, I think a lot of more artists are going to make a lot more money that way in the long term. I think discoverability is still a challenge with a lot of these things.
Right. But I think that the music industry will be very happy to hear that it's not a label guy, not an R&D guy, not a tech guy, but a musician who is giving them input on what a streaming music service should be. Those are the people who it needs to serve us as listeners, but it needs to serve them as creators.
It's also it's great that it comes from a creator. It's also a musician who's told the music industry where to go.
Screw
for a long
you.
Time.
Right.
Yeah. So he's
right
going,
on.
You guys are all crazy. This whole thing doesn't make any sense. And so
I am going to revise my down signal on the Beats acquisition, because I've thought this was dumb in every respect, but I didn't count Trent Reznor in, and the fact that they got Trent and that he's going to work on a new, and they'll be, I don't know if they're going to rebrand it. It'd be a shame to throw out the Beats name, but a new subscription service from Apple early next year with the support of the musicians would be very exciting. I don't know how you can make musicians happy though. Apple's making noises about reducing the price. Spotify's already got their family plan down to $5 a month.
Well, I think, I think that Apple, while it didn't go off well, I think the kind of thing that Apple subscription service can do is what they saw with YouTube, where there's big launches and Apple can do a lot of things that a lot of other subscription services can't do. I think that the YouTube one didn't go as well.
Yeah, they could force it down.
Well, but they didn't. I think that it's, they didn't really force it down. It's people who said that they wanted auto. I didn't get it. It's, right. it didn't.
But I turn on auto download because I don't buy that much music, and when I do, I want it to go on my phone.
Right. Yeah. It's I didn't do it because I'm on Spotify. But with Spotify, I download almost everything, and if a YouTube album showed up on my phone, I guess I wouldn't think that was an upsetting thing. I mean, I think a lot of people made a lot of hay out of that for nothing. But I think that there is, Apple can do a lot of those things and be aggressive about exclusive, pay people that in ways that Spotify can't to have exclusive releases on their platform. I think that, again, I think one of the big things that a lot of people are starting to talk about, not just for the music, but for video and everything else, is really thinking about, how the tastemakers are, remunerated as well. I think that's part of the calculation that needs to be figured out, is that it's no longer going to be radio. It's no longer going to be product placement, from music and so on and so forth. What you have to figure out is how you get the 18-year-old kid that everyone's listening to their mixes, how does he get to do that full time? And
right.
I think that figuring out a way to spread that out so that you have the kids that are figuring this out or the adults that really know jazz or the whatever, and having them actually get a little bit of cut of that pot so that they can make that their business. You know, that is the, to me, that's the future of radio.
Well, isn't that what Beats was all about? Isn't that what Iovine said? Is it's all about human created playlists?
It is, but I don't think it's going to be human created playlists by a bunch of employees of Beats. I think it's going to be figuring out ways that that humans can figure out those playlists. You know, my brother, for instance, has a great taste in rap music and these underground rap and all kinds of edgy stuff. And I love, you know, he makes me mixes and he always asks me what I want for Christmas. I'm like, right. I just want another mix, you know, and I, you know, and I would, you know, I'd be, and I think that there are people out there like that, that can make those, you know, that we want to listen to, that we want to get those mixes from.
So I
don't know. I do. I mean, because I don't want to listen to the radio. I don't want to listen to.
Right. I mean, there needs to be some discovery system, and it probably is almost always somebody you know saying, hey, you would like this, ultimately, right?
Yeah.
Even if it's a DJ I don't think these exist anymore, on an album-oriented rock station.
Well, I mean, and that was the thing. I mean, I think we, you know, talked about it at one point in time. You know, there was, you know, a lot of us when I was a music director for a radio station, you know, Mike Holleran in San Diego. I mean, all of us looked at his playlist,
right.
You know, like, you know, and all of us picked every, I mean, when he picked something, all the rest of us at least listened to it seriously.
He was
because
a taste
he had
maker.
Really good taste.
Yeah, exactly. I am on the side of streaming music, says Trent Reznor. And I think the right streaming service could solve everybody's problem. Ownership is waning. I think that's true. Remember, Steve Jobs was the one who said, oh, no, you want to own that record. He says, no, everybody's comfortable with the cloud now. Your documents, who knows where they are? They are there when you need them. That's what you were just talking about with your email. The idea that I've got my records on the shelf, this is Trent Reznor, doesn't feel as important even to me as it used to. I just think we haven't hit quite the right formula yet. By the way, he grew up in North Pittsburgh. Did you know that?
I did.
In the middle of a cornfield.
I don't know about that, but
that's what it says right here. It says it right here.
He got. I didn't know that he got. I knew that he was from Pittsburgh. I didn't know.
He's a farm boy like you. He's a farm boy.
Yeah. His best album still is Pretty Hate Machine. In case anyone's wondering, you probably haven't heard that.
But and Trent, and by the way, the occasion for this interview in Billboard is that he's turning 50, and so you know the kids today are not thinking of Trent Reznor as a hip guy. Yet he's doing music for films. He did The Social Network, did great soundtrack for The Social Network. His most recent is Gone Girl, another Fincher film. So he's definitely in, you know, making music that people are listening to, even if it's not Nine Inch Nails. He did, by the way, he says, I was with Bono during the fated release of the U2 album. He says, I was with Bono that day. I was at the Apple event. We were hanging out after they did it. There's an immense sense of pride toward the album he just spent several years making. He was very proud of what he did, but I think the misstep was the wording. If it would have been, here it is, if you want it, come get it. This is, by the way, what I said, because Apple has a mechanism for that. I'm assuming the momentum of the situation led to the oversight and not thinking people might feel intruded upon. So he's a little sensitive to that.
I think also guys that have moved out of alternative rock or any other concert, you know, whether it's Stuart Copeland or Danny Elfman or Trent Reznor, they really see this as a business. You know, this is
to make a living.
Exactly. And so they're figuring it out, and they know that selling songs for them long ago probably hasn't been the thing that primarily paid their bills. You know, making music is still paying their bills,
right.
But they're looking at it from a different angle.
Well, I for one am thrilled that I would hope that more musicians would get involved in this discussion, and I would guess that Jimmy Iovine, Dr. Dre, and Trent Reznor could probably bring in a pretty big crew of people and say, "What is it that you need?" But I think it's interesting. I mean, they're basically acknowledging, look, if people don't buy records, they listen to streaming music. So how do we make this work for musicians?
And once you change over to a subscription service, I mean, it took me a little while, and I didn't quite get it, and I had a couple of false starts. But once you get into subscription services,
I love it.
Buying songs. I mean,
I like the hybrid. So I have to say, I use Google Music. Amazon would be the same, where you can actually not so much with Amazon, but with Google Music, you've got the subscription, but all your it's kind of like iTunes Match Plus subscription. And I think that's something Apple could do. Where all of everything you've ever bought and everything you've ever owned and digitized is in the cloud and available to you on all your devices, plus this great streaming music service. And, you know, maybe that's the key, because I don't think musicians aren't going to be happy unless they make more money, period, out of this stuff. So maybe if it ties into kind of, hey, you like this? Maybe you'd like to give some money to the artist and get some extra stuff, or maybe you'd want to download it, that kind of thing.
Well, and I think also we're looking at different generations of musicians. I mean, I think that the next generation of musicians aren't really, when you talk to them, a lot of them aren't thinking about making millions from their, they're pretty, you know,
the platinum era is over.
It's going to be their concerts. Right. It's going to be the t-shirts. It's going to be a lot of the other stuff that happens around their music and not
so
as
what
much
do you
selling
think?
Directly.
I understand why Taylor pulled her stuff out of Spotify. Is that a mistake, though? I mean, there is promotional value to it. It's like saying, you guys can't play it on the radio anymore.
You know, I think that she's in a unique position because she has a very
she has a brand new album
fan base.
And they're
young. Yeah, she has a brand new album and very young and very – it is interesting. I think it's a big experiment to see, you know, how that turns out.
Yes.
I think her label seems to be doing a lot of experimentation of holding back certain songs in Europe and taking it out of Spotify, and I think that they're experimenting with, and they can afford to because, you know, they have, 16-year-old girls that are saving up all summer to see her four times, you know, so they can, and she's making a lot of money. I mean, I'm sure she's making money on her album, but I'm sure she's making more money on her concerts, and so I think that they can afford to experiment. I'm not sure if it's going to work, but I think that she's one of the few artists that can afford to do it without paying a heavy price.
Well, and she's super savvy. I mean, if you look at her Instagram feed, she really used Instagram, I think, quite nicely to promote the album. She now it's pictures of her and people buying the CD. But before that, it was pictures of the lyrics. It's kind of an interesting. This was before the album came out. It was pictures of the lyrics in different forms and to promote it. And they would say, "Here's the bonus track. 2 days till release." One day to release. I mean, she really, I think, did a great job in promoting this. She really.
Well, and they have. I mean, they have very, very. We've had the opportunity to work with a variety of artists, and a lot of them have very savvy teams. Whether it's Alicia Keys or Taylor Swift, Bruno Mars. I mean, these guys are all folks that spend a lot. They have a big team that's working on it. They think through that as well, and they have a lot of control over it, but. They've got some incredible teams that are behind them that are planning this stuff out for a year.
Look what else she's done. The physical CD of the new album comes with 13 Polaroids. There are 5 different sets, 65 in all. Collect all 5 with a handwritten lyric from 1989 at the bottom. I mean, this is how you sell physical objects, right?
Right.
Brilliant. You might sell 5 CDs to a true fan who wants all the Polaroids, right?
Well, that gets back to exactly what Trent Reznor did with his album, where he had, you know, instead of just selling music, he sold the experience and made a lot of money doing it.
You know?
So I think that looking for ways to add value, I think this got out to, like, for instance, when Apple started having stores and all the Apple resellers were like, well, you're cutting into our business. Well, Apple wasn't cutting into the value add business of we provide stuff for the video market or the business market. What they were doing is saying, you can't just sell Apple stuff. You can't just sell that. You need to truly add value, be a value-added reseller of our. And I think that, you know, I think that there's a lot of places for artists to make a lot of money from their, you know, working with their fans and providing goods that their fans really want. And I think that there's a huge opportunity there. And I think that thinking about it in I want to sell songs is a very myopic, you know, view of what's possible.
Let's talk P-Calc. I like the P-Calc folks. Actually, it's a guy. It's a single guy, right, Renee?
James Thompson.
He's really supported the podcast movement. He, for instance, sponsored Jason Snell's page. It's just a calculator, but he did something I think very interesting. He made the calculator work in the notifications bar so that you could install the app and then you would get an iOS 8 widget that would have a calculator in it. Apple yanked the app, saying notification center widgets on iOS cannot perform calculations. The weird thing is, it was already in the store. It had already been approved. Is it back now? What's the latest?
So, I mean, it's a complicated issue, and it goes to the core of how the App Store works or doesn't work, depending on your point of view. So Apple announced extensibility, which, and part of that is Today View widgets. and they have it on both Yosemite and on iOS. Apple made their own calculator widget on Yosemite. They did not make one on iOS. Whether you can read anything into that or not, you know, depends on your point of view. So James Thompson took pCalc and he managed to get the entire calculator portion. It does a lot more than just calculations. It's a very sophisticated scientific engineering calculator. But he put the basic calculator functionality in an iOS 8 widget. It got approved by the App Store, and it got featured by the App Store. Now, one of the things that I don't know if everybody knows, that the App Store isn't one thing. So, for example, developer relations and app review are under Phil Schiller, who's the senior vice president of marketing, where App Store management and App Store review are under Eddie Q, who's the senior vice president of services. So Apple featuring something doesn't say anything about the review process.
Oh, it wasn't? So they didn't reject it.
Well, it was approved and then by Schiller's review team, and then it was featured by Eddie Q's editorial team. But the editorial team has no review purview. So it being featured means nothing other than they saw it, thought
they
it was
like
good,
it.
Put it up on the store.
Yeah.
Yeah, they like it. Apple then, someone else, maybe more senior in the review team, then said, wait a minute, this is not what we intended the widgets to be. We wanted them to be very quick, very light. Interactions or information on iOS. On Yosemite, it's a different thing. But on iOS, we don't want anything as full functional as a calculator here. We didn't expect anybody could do it because, frankly, James Thompson, he worked on the Finder at Apple. He's a brilliant developer.
All right.
He managed to get an entire calculator. And this is one of those situations where it sounds like Apple has this category called unanticipated, where they didn't think anybody could do it. And then they saw it and they were like, this is not what we wanted. So they called them. They didn't yank the app. They just said, we need you to remove this.
Remove the widget or we will yank. Or we will
yank. And then, you know, you can go back. And, you know, he was very classy about it. He mentioned it on Twitter. He didn't go running to the press or anything. But a lot of us picked it up and we looked into the story. And then Apple, I know TechCrunch got an email about it. I got an email about it too. They said, you know, we moved it up the chain. I don't know if it went all the way to Phil Schiller or not, but they moved it up the chain. They evaluated it and they said, wait a minute, we're going to say this is okay. We weren't sure about it. We took a little bit of time. We thought it over.
Good.
Decided this is fine. But you know, this keeps happening where it gets through review and then later they sort of deal with it. It's hard to say what the solution is though, because no developer wants, you know, several weeks of them trying to make up their mind before the app is approved. When new versions of iOS come out, developers are encouraged to use these new features because they'll get featured. But if they use them too far beyond what Apple expected, they might get rejected. And there's so many apps to get reviewed by the time a new OS version comes out that the reviewers are going as fast as they can anyway. So sort of a confluence of all the worst aspects.
I can understand how that could happen. What would their objection to a calculator be, though?
Well, he would just remove the widget and it would go back to normal.
Yeah, I understand, but why wouldn't you want it in the notifications?
They just originally thought it was too heavy for iOS. They didn't want full apps. They didn't want you to be able to go to Notification Center and stay there. They were fine with you entering a formula and then getting booted into the calculator app.
So you could put a tip calculator in notifications.
Or the eBay app would tell you what it's supposed to just be. You go there, you press a button, and you're back out. Not that you're staying in there for any length of time.
Right.
And part of this, at least the way I think, is that there's no sort of central app store. Like Angela Ahrens runs Apple Retail and Apple Online, but there's no vice president of App Store whose only job it is to make the App Store awesome. Like a really passionate, really high profile, really engaged individual who just wants to handle all these things. So you have like a bunch of different teams working on things, and I think it might behoove Apple, as the App Store makes more money when we see that every year, for them to have a sort of a dedicated person in charge of that.
Got it.
Make it smoother for everybody.
I agree. They should have that.
Get on that.
We'll do that. Angela Ahrens is in charge of it now, though, right? That's her.
Well, she's in charge of Apple Store, not App Store. App Store is the service is Eddie Q. The editorial is Eddie Q. The management is Eddie Q. The review and the developer relations is
Phil Schiller.
The frameworks are Craig Federighi.
You need one person.
Yeah.
One person. App Store person.
You need an App Store czar.
Yeah, because this happens again and again, and it's a little confusing to users, and it's got to be terrible for developers who just don't know what the rules are.
And frankly, it's bad for Apple, too, because they get negative publicity, and people think they don't know what they're doing. And they actually, a lot of the people there used to be indie developers. They care about all these things, too. It's just getting navigated in the App Store is not easy.
All right. Well, now I get it. And by the way, it's back. They decided, you can have a calculator widget. All right. If you insist. But please don't put a word processor in there.
Well, that's the thing. Is like once you allow calculators, what's the next person going to try? And it's a very blurry. Like some things are very like black and white. You can't have this. You can't have that. Things that are on the borderline, like because the widgets are incredibly constrained. They can't use a lot of memory because you need the memory to run the main application. And you know, what can you really fit in there? And what can some developers fit and not others? And it's going to be interesting to see it shake out.
Patrick Delahanty says he wants Doom in the notifications.
I'm sure Carmack is working on that.
Christian Bale is out. Seth Rogen is in. Christian Bale, who was rumored to be playing Steve Jobs in the new Aaron Sorkin movie Jobs, based on the Walter Isaacson's biography. Perfect choice for casting, but Bale says, I'm not right for it. Too bad. Back to the drawing board. But Seth Rogen apparently is in, according to Variety, to play Woz.
I think that's great for Woz. I think that's a much better pick than we've seen in the other movies.
Much more sympathetic.
Yep.
I actually sent an email to Woz, and he said he likes it.
Nice.
He's happy with the choice. I would be. I'd be honored. Apple is opening a... There it is, yeah. He kind of... Yeah, he's Wazzy. You know what? It's not about the looks, and I think people focus on how much they look like that character. It's about the persona. And that's why Bale was so good for Jobs, because here's this artistic genius who is a little prickly, a little unpredictable. Bale had that volatile, you know, kind of you don't know what he's going to do. Perfect for Jobs. It's not about a physical look. It's about the feeling. And Rogan has that cuddly, you know, friendly, kind of slightly goofy persona that is exactly right for, I think, Steve Wozniak. Apple's opening a Seattle software office. They probably care about that in Seattle. Apple's opening a university in China. They probably care about that in China. Apple's going to offer free Beats music on Southwest Airlines. You already can get Dish TV on Southwest with their Wi-Fi. Now you'll be able to get Beats music. They need to do more deals like that. Get people. I mean, that's how you have to introduce people to Beats. And I love the headphones on the airplane.
Yeah.
Rocking out, man.
What all the kid airplanes are wearing these days.
And again, those are the kind of things that Apple can get very aggressive about in ways that that you know, it's hard for a lot of their competitors to do. They can spend a lot of money on it.
Who's going to say no to that?
Right.
Story from FierceWireless.com. Remember, we talked a little bit about the SIM that's in the iPad that lets you choose your carrier. Anybody but Verizon, they didn't want to play. And which is such a great idea because you could also, if it wasn't AT&T who locks it, you could switch month to month and so forth. Mm-hmm. But don't expect that to show up in phones, iPhones, according to an Apple exec, Greg Joswiak. He's the vice president of iPhone, iPod, and iOS, so I think he knows what he's doing. He says the SIM makes more sense for the iPad than for the phone because most iPhones, by far, are sold through carriers. That's a good point. It's about the customer experience, he said at Recode Mobile. We ultimately don't know who you're going to use as the carrier, and we want to make it as easy as possible. Oh, he's talking about the iPad thing. That's because they sell it at retail. Through the stores.
It'd probably still be better for consumers if they had Apple SIMs in the phones, but it's not better for carriers who are, you know, the intermediary.
I think really that's the subtext of this is we have more clout with the iPad than we do with the iPhone.
Well, I think you remember, Leo, when they had a patent for a completely virtual SIM card and the carriers went bananas before they even floated it. It just, no, we're not doing this. It'll be a backlash.
And yeah.
Slowly we move.
He does think that perhaps the Apple SIM card will be available at some time. But he says anything that's new, people want to stop and evaluate it.
Some countries still have dual SIM phones because like some places in India, there's just no reception in one area and there isn't another where people have two phones. It would be great. It'd be great for consumers if we could have this technology.
Apple is rapidly approaching 1 billion iOS devices sold. Customers have downloaded 85 billion from the apps from the App Store. Jaws says Apple has a naive belief that if we make a better product or better experience, there will be a market for it. That seems like a good belief. That doesn't seem naive. If you build it, they will come. All right, let's take a break. Come back. We got to get your tips and picks, my friends. But first, a word from Lynda.com. Oh, I do love Lynda.com. We had Bert Monroy yesterday on Triangulation. Everybody loves Bert. He is the Photoshop guru. And he does a weekly show about Photoshop that is so great. I just love it so much. It's free for the first week, too. You don't even have to have a lynda.com account, which I think is so cool. Lynda.com. You're going to want to make an account because Bert also has courses on. In fact, let me show you Bert's courses. He has courses on how he made his newest painting, which he just released, which is an Amsterdam mist, he calls it. And he has the Pixel Playground, which you can go see free, but the and he has the Dreamscapes, which are wonderful, where he takes pictures and retouches them to make them dreamscapes. But then he also has the Amsterdam mist, how he did it, the making of Amsterdam mist, the natural elements, the making of Amsterdam mist, the structures. And he did a little bit of that yesterday on triangulation. And if you saw that, I think you probably immediately signed up for a course at lynda.com. Actually, that's the nice thing. You don't just sign up for a course at lynda.com. You get free run of the place. You can take any of their thousands of courses, all beautifully produced. Let me just show you, the making of Times Square.
You know, my connection with Bert, you know, other than Twit and Tech TV, is he actually taught me Photoshop. He did a class in 1992.
You cannot get somebody better to teach you Photoshop.
So there was a class in South San Francisco for going from Photoshop 2.5 to 3.0. And I figured
I got to see the production value on lynda.com is awesome. And if you want to learn Photoshop from Bert Monroy, you can. He is obviously on a green screen set because he's actually in the painting right now. And it's amazing. It looks great. So how did he make this? Well, he did it with some amazing Photoshop techniques. There is no one better to teach you Photoshop than Bert Monroy. But I got to say, that's what's great about lynda.com. You're learning how to use applications from the masters. And they're not just, you know, very proficient at the program. They don't just do it in real life. They also are great teachers. I don't know how lynda.com does it, but they come up with the best. These are high-quality videos, not like homemade YouTube videos. They break the courses up into bite-sized pieces so you can learn at your own pace, watch a little bit at a time. Tools include searchable transcripts so you can find the part you're looking for and jump right to it. Playlists. And you can get certificates of course completion, which you can use on your LinkedIn profile. Whether you're a beginner, an intermediate, or an advanced user, lynda.com will have a course for you. And while you're on the go, you can learn with Linda's iPhone, iPad, and Android. We're doing Lightroom right now. Lisa and I are doing a Lightroom course on lynda.com. And the best part is it's $25 a month for unlimited access to over 100,000 video tutorials. You can get a premium plan, too. That means you can download courses and watch them offline. Premium plan members can also download project files and practice along with the instructor. Great stuff for Photoshop users. But, yeah, if you're interested in photography, they've got amazing stuff. Courses that cover composition and exposure, intermediate courses on lighting and using Photoshop and the GIMP to enhance photographs, advanced tutorials on things like color correction, and of course, mastering the Adobe Creative Cloud. And that's where Bert Monroy comes in. What a genius. Some of our favorite people, Derek Story, Ben Gold, some of the best people are teaching at lynda.com. $25 a month. Tell you what, apparently, you still don't believe me because you haven't signed up. What if I gave you a free 7-day trial? You just go to lynda.com/MacBreak, and now you've got the run of the place. In fact, I think really the challenge is going to be, oh, I want to learn that. Oh, I'd love to learn that. Oh, if you're a developer, you can learn Java, C. You can learn how to write for iOS, for Android, design patterns, game design, programming foundations, PHP, Python, Ruby. It just goes on and on. It's such a great resource. We love them. I'm really glad to have a Lynda account. I've had a Lynda account for years. Lynda, lynda.com/MacBreak. Try it for a week today. You're going to love it. Here's a good one. The Nix software. These are those Google plugins now. Like Silver Effects Pro, which is the best black and white tool ever. Learn how to use these tools. You'll be so thrilled. It will give you such satisfaction. Lynda.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support. Ooh, they've got a Swift programming language course already. Wow. Let's see here. Alex Lindsay, do you have a pick for us this week?
I do. I do a lot of animation of logos and stuff like that. So a lot of things that have to be done very quickly. And so one of the secrets of this is a company called Zaxworks. And they just released their new version. It's called Pro Animator. And this is a standalone piece of software that basically lets you bring in outlines. So you can have your Illustrator or EPS file and pop it into 3D and animate it and stuff like that for your, whether it's education or corporate, or this is the secret weapon for a lot of, for almost every broadcast house I know. So if you're looking for a way to do it, and they make plugins for After Effects and so on and so forth, but they make the standalone one, and they just released it, and it's got all kinds of incredible new things, for everything from what's called ambient occlusion, which pays attention to whether objects are close to each other and starts creating drop shadows. A lot of what's called instancing, which takes a whole bunch of objects and does it automatically, throws them out there for you. And it is a, there's a lot of these cool animations that are really, you don't have to become, this Maya animator or a Cinema 4D animator to do this stuff. You can get a lot of this stuff very quickly. So if you're thinking about a quick animation for your website or for your industrial video or for broadcast, because as I said, a lot of this is used for broadcast. It's used for titles for movies. All of this stuff is stuff that is very corporate video and so on and so forth. It's just really much easier to do it here if you're not really going to make the commitment to really becoming a 3D guru. So I've used it since version one, so I'm always excited every time. And this is probably one of the biggest upgrades he's come out with. So this is the Pro Animator from Zaxworks, and it's a great value.
ZAXWERKS.com, Zaxworks, man, and it's only how many Alexes?
I think it's about one. I can't remember the exact price of it, but it's. I think it's about one. Expensive. One Alex. Yeah.
Really looks cool. Just go look at the. We're looking at the website. The demo reel is amazing.
And when you look at this image based rendering, what's happening there? You literally just take you take a sphere with your iPhone or whatever, and you can throw it on there and say, "This is what I want to light my objects with," so that when you put them back in front of those things, it looks like they're in the scene. It's really cool.
Mr. Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So like you, Leo, I've been playing with the new Retina 5K iMac, and one of the things I wanted to do was test the gaming on it. And I noticed that Batman Arkham City had been updated to support the new Retina iMac, so I downloaded it. And then I wanted to control it, and the keyboard really wasn't doing it, and I have a trackpad, not a mouse, and that was horrible. So I went and got an Xbox 360 controller. I plugged it in, and of course it didn't work. And I went to the usual place to get the usual driver that made it work, but it hadn't been updated since Snow Leopard. And while it continued working in Mavericks, it no longer worked in Yosemite. And some people said try an older one, but that didn't work either. So I did some searching around, and I found a GitHub repository that had an unofficial version of the unofficial version of the driver. And I downloaded it, and I installed it. It makes a pain right in System Preferences. And once you have that installed, your Xbox 360 controller just shows up, and then you can use it to play whichever games support gamepads on the Mac. And the Xbox 360 is quite a good controller. At least I've always loved it since Halo. And I used it, and I was playing Arkham Asylum in 5K. Admittedly, not at a fantastic frame rate, but I was playing Arkham City in 5K with an Xbox controller. So it was fantastic.
That is neat. Now, somebody says in the chat room that PS3 and 4 controllers just work out of the box.
Yeah, if you have one. I did not have one, right. And I was going to go buy one, but then I saw this, and I had a bunch of
360 controllers. I have lots of 360 controllers lying around. You don't know if there's an Xbox One controller mod.
I do not. I don't have an Xbox One.
I happen to have 360s lying around.
Yeah, that's it, because it was just an extra controller, and I have a bunch of Macs. And with this driver, I could put one controller on every Mac and not have to worry about it.
Right. All right, very cool. Now, have you seen – you're going to like this, Renee, because you're a comic book guy. And I was hoping Alex would be here for this. Have you seen my new keycaps on my lappy toppy? They are completely impossible to use. But if you're into comic books,
so nice,
you're going to love these. These are from Killer Duck Decals. Yeah, you can zoom in. I'll hold it still for you, Jason.
I would never be able to type again.
Well, you can. Every letter's there, every number. You just, they're all done with comic books.
W is for Wolverine.
Yeah, W is Wolverine. B is for Batman. You see, and they have the little letters on there. It isn't just Marvel or DC. It's all mixed up. As a comic book fan, you will, of course, immediately recognize many of these.
Snicked and Bamf are like Fight or Flight. It's amazing.
I love Snicked and Bamf and Pow. These are from Killer Duck Decals. What is Snicked from Banff? What is that from?
Snicked is Wolverine popping his claws.
Oh, yeah.
Banff is Nightcrawler teleporting
That's
away.
That's the adamantium claws snapping at him. Yeah. What is Banff?
Banff is Nightcrawler teleporting.
So Snicked is on the shift key and Banff is on the caps lock key. But you see, you can kind of see. I actually figured it out. They're a little hard to apply. Yeah, there they are. That's killerduckdecals.com. They're a little hard to apply, but it's only $12.
There's Shazam, Leo.
Shazam! That's on the return, of course. Yeah. I'm a big fan of these. If you go to Killer Duck Decals, you'll see they have other skins as well. But $12, man, and they came very fast. They came a couple of days after I ordered them. And I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. If you're a comic book fan, you'll enjoy
it.
Yeah, well, you can see the letters are there. It takes a little getting used to. It helps if you're a touch typist. Or if you know exactly what Wolverine is.
I'm ordering all M is for Magneto's helmet. I mean, it's terrific. Leo.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
I is Iron Man. Who is P? Is that Skeletor?
Punisher.
It's got to be alliterative. Spider-Man. Flash, Green Lantern. I love Joker. This. The Joker. It just gives you a little happiness.
U is for Ultra Boy.
Yeah. $12 to buy. Man. Really, the cost is the effort to slowly, one by one, put these
and
on.
And I think your registration is quite good, Leo. You did a good job there.
I did. I was listening to Security Now while I did it. Some people knit. Some people put on keycaps. and yes, they peel right off. It's kind of that 3M, you know, stuff that you can get off. So if you change your mind.
I'm ordering them now.
I thought you might. H is for Havoc.
Now I know what's up. Get Jason Snell for the holidays.
Oh, Jason Snell would love these. Andy Anaka would love these.
Yeah.
I know we have major comic book fans in our audience, so I thought I'd mention this. KillerDuckDecals.com. I don't see a Superman.
Licensing.
Well, there's some DC stuff. There's Batman. There's Captain America on the sea. That's Marvel, isn't it? I don't see.
We've got a lot of obscure ones.
Oh, yeah. There's some. You got to be. If you're a real comic book fan, you'll go, whoa.
L is for Lobo. Z is for Zorro.
Yeah.
E is for Electro. L is for Leonardo the Ninja Turtle.
Oh, there's a Ninja Turtle on here. Look at that. Yeah. You don't even see them after a while. You just kind of, oh, look. Our show is every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific. That is 2 p.m. Eastern time. And now because of we've retreated from daylight saving time, we are now at 1900 UTC. If you can figure out what time zone you're in, you can figure that out. 1900 UTC on Tuesdays. But, you know, we always make on-demand audio and video available after the fact. You can get it at twit.tv/MBW. You could use our fabulous Twit apps on every platform. Of course, iOS. There's several on iOS, Android, even Windows Phone, Roku, you bet. Or just, you know, your favorite podcaster. There's so many great apps out now. In fact, if you want to see a review of some of the big ones, including Marco Arment's new one, Overcast, we did that on to this week's iPad today. Kind of looked at some of the podcatchers out there. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Alex Lindsay, Pixel Core.
Thank you.
Where are you going next?
I'm coming to San Francisco next. So I'll be there next week. And on Friday, you know, now I know that Mark Zuckerberg's doing his own question and answer on Thursday, but on Friday I'm going to follow that up with my question and answer.
Awesome.
Ask Alex, if you just go to bit.ly, ask Alex 5, you can, it'll pop you to, you can get a little calendar thing and everything else, but it's bit.ly, just ask Alex 5, it'll be at 2 p.m. on Friday. We're just keep on, it's mostly us testing our system, but if you have questions about video or anything else, I generally, Pittsburgh, I'll answer it.
You think you're going to do this on a regular basis? That's neat.
I've been, you know, we use it a lot of times when we have a lot of new features in Hazu, you know, our question and answer system.
Right.
So I'm thinking of trying to make it a weekly thing. Kind of this random hodgepodge of things. So far I haven't quite got to weekly, but this is the fifth one. So we're slowly moving down that path.
Excellent. Renee Ritchie, imore.com. Great to read everything there, but also the Debug podcast is a must listen to each and every week. You do such a good job, Amor. imore.com/debug. Anything you want to plug?
Well, we relaunched Vector recently, so it went from an interview show to a panel show. So we have one designer, one developer, one psychoanalyst, and one media person, and we discuss the human side of technology.
And John Siracusa, round two, is the current debug.
Yes.
Always fun stuff.
Yes. He explains to us why we're wrong about so many things.
If it's coming from John, I believe it.
Yes.
Hey, thank you both of you for being here. Andy and Ock will be back next week. We will be back here next week. I hope you will be too. But meanwhile, time to get back to work because you know what? Break time is over.